Welcome to episode 1447 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. We are continuing our series on the life and times of the apostles, continuing this week with a focus on the Apostle Peter. In our last episode, Peter correctly identified Jesus as the Messiah, but immediately revealed how little he understood about the kind of Messiah Jesus had come to be. Today we ascend a mountain with Peter, James, and John, where for a brief moment the veil is lifted, and the disciples see not merely a teacher from Galilee, but the glory of the Son of God shining through the humanity they had come to know so well. Acts of the Apostles, Part 1, Chapter 7.
I have been asked, more times than I can count, what the most extraordinary thing was that I ever witnessed. People expect me to say the resurrection, and the resurrection is the most important event in human history. There are no words adequate to the resurrection, but the question is about witnessing, about standing somewhere with your own body, in your own skin, and seeing something with your own eyes that undoes every assumption you brought with you. For that, I say, the mountain. 6 days after Caesarea Philippi, 6 days after the greatest moment of my life and the most embarrassing moment of my life arrived within 5 minutes of each other, Jesus took three of us, James, John, and me, and led us up a high mountain to pray. I did not know what was coming. None of us did. We climbed in the dark and we prayed, and at some point in the night, something changed. His face changed. That is the only way I know how to begin. His face changed the way the sky changes at dawn. Not because something is added, but because something that was always there is finally visible. The light did not come from outside him. It came from within him. His clothes became white, not the white of bleached linen, not any white produced by any process I had ever seen. White the way light itself is white, without shadow, without gradation, blazing. I had seen him still a storm. I had seen him feed thousands from almost nothing. I had heard him speak as if the words of God were his own because they were. And still I was not prepared for this. All of those things I could hold at some distance. I could say, remarkable, inexplicable, but here is a man, here is a body, here is someone I know. On the mountain, the distance collapsed. What I saw was not a man transfigured. What I saw was what the man had always been, briefly uncovered. The humanity was the veil. The glory was the reality underneath. And for a few minutes on that mountain, the veil was pulled back, and he was not alone. Two figures stood with him. I knew them, not from having met them. They had lived centuries before I was born. But I knew them the way you know something that has been given to you rather than learned. Moses and Elijah, the law and the prophets, standing in the light with the one they had both been pointing toward. They were speaking with him. Luke tells us they spoke of his departure, his exodus, what he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. The cross was already the subject of conversation on the mountain of glory. I did not understand that then. I was too busy being overwhelmed to understand much of anything. James and John were beside me, barely upright. I remember looking at them and finding no help there. John's face was the color of limestone. James had his eyes closed, and I do not think it was in reverence. The figures began to withdraw, the light began to shift, and I felt, with sudden desperation, The way you feel when something beautiful is ending and you want to stop it, even though you cannot. Felt the moment slipping, and so I did what I do. Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Mark's account, which comes from my own testimony, is honest about what followed. He notes that I did not know what I was saying. That is the most accurate thing anyone has ever written about me. While I was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and out of the cloud came a voice.
This is my son whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him.
We fell on our faces, all 3 of us, not a chosen posture of reverence. We fell the way you fall when your legs simply stop working beneath you. The last time a voice like that had spoken from a cloud above a mountain, the mountain was Sinai, and Moses had gone up alone, and all of Israel camped at the base and waited in terror. I knew that story. I had heard it every year since I was a child. The people said to Moses, "Speak to us yourself, and we will listen. But do not have God speak to us, or we will die." And here I was, face down on a mountainside, having just proposed a building project. Then I felt a hand on my shoulder. Quiet. The weight of it familiar.
"Get up, Simon Bar-Jonah. Do not be afraid."
I looked up. The cloud was gone. Moses and Elijah were gone. The blazing light was gone. There was only Jesus, looking, as far as I could tell, exactly as he always looked. An ordinary man on a dark hillside. Except that I would never again be entirely sure what ordinary meant. He told us not to tell anyone what we had seen until the Son of Man was raised from the dead. We kept that instruction, the 3 of us, though we argued among ourselves on the way down about what rising from the dead could mean, since we still could not quite hold the idea of his dying. I have thought about the mountain many times since. And what strikes me now, what did not strike me then because I was too close to it, is the direction of the voice. The voice did not address Jesus. It addressed us. "This is my son. Listen to him." 2 days earlier at Caesarea Philippi, I had confessed who Jesus was and then immediately tried to redirect where he was going. The voice on the mountain was the Father's response to that. Not to the confession, but to the correction. Not, "Well done, Simon," but, "Listen to him. Let him speak. Stop talking long enough to hear what he is actually saying." Three shelters. I wanted to build 3 shelters and stay on the mountain forever. He had a cross to get to, and I kept trying to hand him a hammer. "Listen to him." I am still learning what that costs.
Many of us wish we could remain on the mountaintop. We long for moments of clarity, spiritual power, answered prayer, and unmistakable encounters with God. Yet Peter discovered that the purpose of revelation is not escape, but obedience. The disciples were not allowed to build shelters and stay in the glory. They had to descend the mountain and continue following Jesus toward Jerusalem and ultimately toward the cross. The same is true for us. God gives us moments of insight and encouragement, not so that we can cling to them, but so that we can trust Christ more fully when the road grows difficult. The question left ringing from the mountain is not simply, "Have you seen his glory?" but "Are you listening to him?" To be continued.